Hello and welcome to the Sound and Fiction podcast, where we talk about music and stories. I'm your host, Ali Al-Said. Today I'm joined by Abdullah Faisal, a musician, composer, producer, and more recently, a filmmaker. He's performing with bands such as Majaz and Abstract, and he's here to talk about his latest projects and share some of his stories with us.
You were telling me about your session last night and what you were working on.
Basically it's the production part that I want to really get better at, because a couple of years back I realized that I cannot call myself a guitarist, nor a drummer, nor a I guess I call myself a percussionist drummer, but then that's, I never thought that or I never considered that this would be my main thing. Like, my main thing definitely would be composing and producing. So I always considered composing and producing as an instrument, and I treat it like an instrument. So I try to practice as much as I can. And so I always involve myself with different artists, like who from different kind of genres, different kind of music. And so yesterday I was working on two tracks. One was with a Lithuanian musician. She's very interesting. You should check her out. She has a project called Bal Colombia. No, sorry, Balcumbia, which is a Balkan music mixed with cumbia music.
Nice.
So they've been touring in Latin America and Europe. They're pretty good stuff. And so she's just like me, because she backpacked in Latin America, especially in Colombia, and that's exactly what I did. But she's from Lithuania. And so I'm working on a track with her, and I'm working on a track with another Colombian girl. She's from Cali. And also another Colombian friend of mine who came to visit me. He's called Kogi Croker. And he has pretty good stuff as well. So yesterday I was working on these two tracks, but also on his track, just considering it as a practice.
Okay, let's unpack that, because you've already said so many things. That
I know, yeah.
Okay, so the first thing is, how did that come to you naturally, the fact that you're looking at yourself as more of a producer and a composer than a musician? And what's the difference, even if you're talking about that technically?
The difference between a musician and a producer. Okay, so basically I started as a guitarist, and I wanted to start with drums actually, but because we were living in a small apartment back then, so I couldn't have drum set, so I went for a guitar, and directly to electric guitar and rock and metal, Korn and System of a Down, and so I started with that. And then I had this band that actually I just posted about a few days ago with Faisal Sheikh and Mo, the drummer, and Hussein Nasser. And so they already had a band called The Tryout.
Right.
And they wanted to do this gig. I think there's this gig that approached either Faisal or Hussein. So they're like, okay, same band, just the bassist. Like, I didn't play bass, so he said, can you play bass? And I'm like, no, sure, but okay, I'll play bass. So that was the first time I played bass, and it was, this is where I realized, okay, I want to be a bassist.
Okay.
So I shifted from guitar to bass for a while, and I remember even Ahmed Al-Qasim, he gave me a couple of DVDs of, like, the top bassists in the world, and I was, like, getting serious.
Who was your go-to bassist at the time?
Internationally, or when in Bahrain, you mean?
Internationally,
that's definitely Victor Wooten.
Okay.
Like, he's like, I'm sure he's the idol of most bassists, you know, but I really like the way he play. And I forgot his name. I think Geddy Lee is the guy from Rush. He's
all
the
right
vocalist. This guy is crazy. Like, he plays the bass, he sings, and then sometimes he plays keys and he sings, and he plays the bass line with his feet. He has this bass synth. So he's playing the bass line and playing keyboard and singing at the same time. So that's definitely something that I really looked up for. Right after that is when 2011. So everybody was at home for a certain time, and I was
kind of like now.
Exactly. Yeah. And then exactly in that period, I was. I had the Moe's drums. My friend of mine, he kept it at my place, and I didn't know how to play drums, so it was a chance for me, and I started playing drums with Ahmed Ghawas and Nadine Moussaoui. We formed this band called Bulthama. It was a metal band, and this is where I picked up the drums, but it was always a side thing that I do. It was never my main thing until Majaz.
Okay.
So until Majaz, I was between drums, bass, and guitar. I didn't know which one is mine. And then when Majaz happened, I was actually supposed to be a guitarist.
Mm.
But we were looking for a drummer, and we never found that drummer. So I told him, I'll play drums until we find the drummer. But we never found the drummer. So I started playing.
The search continues.
Yeah, and then from that, Majaz shifted its direction to acoustics. So this is where I picked up the percussion. Actually, the first time I played cajon was on stage. I went on stage to play. Right, I never knew how to play this instrument. I know it, but so this is where I got into percussion. So when my uncle, he used to be a bassist of a band called The Travelers or something in the 70s. And he saw how I'm shifting, and he didn't like that in the beginning. He was like, why are you shifting? You should stick to one thing and just be good
That's how musicians should be.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then when he saw that I keep changing, he told me that you're not a musician, you should be just a composer, you know. Actually, after a couple of years, I realized he was right, you know, that I should stick to composing. It's more of my thing, because I know myself, I'll always want to learn different instruments.
Right.
I want to stick to one.
Yeah, it seems natural to you as well, Yanni. Mafi, there's no like hesitation. It's like, okay, this is the instrument, I'm just going to pick it up, learn it, because it serves the music that you're playing.
Yeah.
Was there any... To this day now, you've gone through all these instruments. What speaks to you the most? Is there still an instrument that you go to for like your comfort zone or your...
I would say if it comes to melodies and chords, definitely my comfort zone is in guitar. Like, for example, if I'm having a music theory conversation with anyone and they'll tell me like, yeah, this scale is actually blah, 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 I will always imagine the fretboard of a guitar in my head. To see what he's talking about, what she's talking about. So this is my comfort zone when it comes to like music theory, which is right now, which right now I'm changing. I'm trying to shift that to piano, because I picked up the piano as soon as the pandemic started. Like I knew how to play just chords, and any musician knows how to play chords and piano, but I didn't know how to play properly. And so I always wanted to learn, especially that I decided to be a producer, and it's much easier if you're more reliant on the keys than the guitar. I mean, it's not a rule, it's just better. So when I started picking up the piano the past 2-3 months, I realized that I can understand music theory much easier than on the guitar. I understand music in general much better than personally, and I think a lot of people agree. So I'm trying to change that, but for the time being, I'm still, my comfort zone is with the guitar if I want to think of music theory or when I imagine chords or certain things. But when it comes to composition, I don't think I have.
So that progression led you to finding what you really interested in music, and that's production and composition, and that impacted the music, your music projects that you're involved in.
Definitely, now. Yeah.
So from then you went through, and I think you mentioned that before to me, like when you started with Mijaz, it kind of shifted the way and your mentality and what you want to do and how you want to do it, and led you to what you looked at, those couple of projects that you just mentioned earlier. But how do you create that balance then of saying like, when do you switch your mind into musician mode to producer or composer mode?
I don't know. I'm not sure if there's like a switch or something. I think, I mean, with Mijaz, I'm a percussionist, and sometimes when we sit and jam, and so yeah, with Mijaz, a percussionist drummer with them, and like mainly that's what I do. But that's an amazing thing about Mijaz, that we all compose. Like we don't rely on one or two people, so we're all involved in the composition
stage.
So I'm the only one in Mijaz that doesn't play a melodic instrument. So Jihad plays cello, it's melody, guitar is melody, bass has melodies, you know, like tones and notes and stuff, but I'm just percussion. So I'm always struggling to give them what I have in mind, because I don't have an instrument to show them what I have in mind. So, which is a good practice for me. Like I have to explain it to them in a non-musical way, in a good way. So this was a good practice for me, like in production. So, but like in terms of shifting, I never felt like I'm shifting. I think I'm,
floating.
Yeah, just exactly. It's just, yeah, flowing. Yeah, definitely. But definitely playing more than one instrument makes production much easier, because you hear the melody, you just know what beat it needs, even if it doesn't have any rhythms. Like if you're a drummer, you hear a melody, you just know what beat comes, you know.
Well, that there was also a shift in how, and I know this is like a key moment for you on a personal level, but creatively as well. spending or spending your time in Colombia and that trip that you've had a while ago. When was that, by the way?
So the first time I went was 2012, okay. Second time 2015, third time 2017. But 2017 was the musical one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the one I did a lot of music.
Okay. So you had like, it was a process until you find like, yeah. Okay, this is the experience.
I want. Yeah, exactly.
What attracted you to Colombia in the first place?
Basically, I was in this phase where I knew a lot of people who were just traveling and immigrating. And okay. I was just accidentally I was around these kind of people, so I always had the idea. I was only 19, between 18 and 19, and then when I had the chance, there was like a student program. I wanted to travel, and exactly at that time I was hosting a Colombian friend of mine at my place for like 3-4 months. He was staying with me, and he's from Medellin, so. Nice. Every single day I wake up, he's telling me about his country and the beautiful things. And of course, like someone who's from Bahrain doesn't know anything about waterfalls or mountains, and he's showing me all the pictures. It's like paradise for me. So, and I was young, so I didn't see much. So yeah. I decided that as soon as I get the chance, mm-hmm. I'm just going to go to Colombia. And that was the first time I traveled alone. I mean, I traveled alone to Dubai, but that's not really traveling if you're from Bahrain, you know.
It's like going to Al Farik.
Exactly. Yeah, it's very close. So I never traveled alone like all the previous trips with my family. Again, I was 18, 19. So, yeah. So that's when I was 19, like in late 19, I decided to do this volunteer program, which is teaching English in rural villages in Colombia. So, so that was the first time. I stayed 3 months. This is where I picked up the language, and this is where I got really attached to Colombia. And it became actually that trip, 2012, is the one that convinced me that I should do nothing but music. Before that, I played, but there was nothing serious. It was just, I play music and that's it. But then after that, I met a lot of musicians there. Mm. One of them is Coogie Crooker, the guy I told you about.
Oh, nice.
So I saw these musicians, and they're just full-time musicians, and they play from Christmas to Christmas, from New Year's to New Year's, you know, and it just fascinated me. And it's only because they live in a community, and they're always surrounded by musicians, different kind of musician. If it's not this drummer, there's this drummer. If it's not this guitarist, it's a huge community. So it really inspired me that, you know, this is where I started becoming like against the corporate system, and like, know, like this was the start of everything. And then I came back to Bahrain. I was like, that's it. I'm never going to have an office job. I'm just going to do music.
But especially with musically, right? Because at that stage, at that age, you were mostly, I think, into like heavy stuff.
Yeah.
stuff. But that kind of trip opened realization of like the possibilities of what you can experience in music.
Exactly, especially in 2014 is when I went to Mexico. That was my second trip alone in Latin America as well. So in 2014, I was introduced to an artist called Gustavo Cerati, and he's like a huge rock star in Latin America. Like, he's huge. He's like Jim Morrison of Latin America, you know.
All right.
So he had a band called Soda Stereo. They're very big as well. So I was introduced to him in 2014 when I was in Mexico, and all my friends are like crazy fans of his stuff. And when I actually listen to his music, it's actually the music I really love, which is progressive, psychedelic kind of rock.
Yeah.
This is, until today, it's one of my favorite music to listen to. So this is, I realized that he's singing in Spanish, you know, like, mm-hmm. and this was 2014. This is when I decided that I'll make music in English, I shouldn't only make music in English, because I'm looking at this, 400 million people speak Spanish in the world, you know, and Arabic is almost the same, maybe less, maybe more, I'm not sure, but I think it's a lot. I mean, we have around 25 Arab countries in the world.
Yeah.
So like, you have a lot of people to listen to you if you sing in Arabic, you know. It's just this culture, especially in the Gulf. Like, I don't think this problem exists a lot in other Arab countries. Maybe they do, but not as much as the Gulf. So 2014, it was my realization that I should make music in Arabic and Spanish, but not English, because I don't know, so many reasons.
Do you feel that's, it's not about limitations, it's just also about, like, I don't know how to put it. And you're right about the region having certain perceptions and views of how, on what music is. And I think somehow, for some reason, we end up in this way of thinking, because it was never like that in the region, especially in Bahrain, the Gulf as a whole. You know, you look back at the old, like, 16th, 17th, it's all in local dialect. So I don't know what happened in like, that early kind of 90s towards 2000, where, like, suddenly that shift kind of...
I would say it's the American imperialism, 100%, you know. It's like, they invaded the world with their culture, you know, because I was also in the Philippines when I was really young, and then the Philippines is even worse than the Gulf. Like, they're too Americanized. Like, crazy. Like, they're more... That's why you see, like, a lot of the best vocalists, they're, like, from... Like, they love karaoke and stuff. Right. You know? Like, there's something about Filipinos and vocals.
Right.
They're really good vocalists, you know? Like, I don't know how they do it. It's probably the church, but but they're really good vocalists. And yeah, most of the time, they sing a lot of American music. And that's... I think that's the thing. It's the invasion of American culture around the world, which is... Yeah, I mean, like, every single country has rap. Every single country has burgers, you know? Like, it's so that, I think it's that.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I think it has a big impact on that. That's so you go there by 2014. That's your second trip, right? And you have that realization. The third time you go, what was the purpose and what happened then?
Yeah, so 2014 was Mexico, and then the second time I went to Colombia was 2015. I didn't do much of music in the second trip. I think Majoz was just starting to do good things. Like, you know, we were serious about recording, releasing singles and playing more. Like, we were starting to become active in 2015. Right. And then I wanted to take, like, a break. So I went to, not from Majoz, but from Bahrain, I mean.
Right.
So I went to Colombia. Exactly. So I went for a month and a half or 2 months, I'm not sure, like, in Colombia as well, 2015. It was just a fun trip. I was just backpacking, having fun. I didn't do much of music in that trip. But 2017 is the musical one, because I had the intention of recording a whole album, but it didn't end this way. It ended up me playing four concerts, which I didn't plan for. Like, I thought, I'll work on an album, and maybe for fun I'll play with my friends one concert, you know? And then I reached, and I was gathering the musicians which I wanted to record the album with, and then they were like, why don't you play a concert? And I'm like, I would love to, let's do it.
As in with them, or as your project, your music?
My project, the project that I wanted to record. Okay. It's what's called Buffet. I mean, still called Buffets.
Okay.
I might change the name, I'm still not sure. So, Buffets has a couple of original songs, and you can find them on SoundCloud. It's not really my best work, but it's just for fun, so if you want to check it out. But yeah, anyways, so I was composing the songs there, and then we ended up practicing. I had to find a drummer and a bassist and a guitarist. We started practicing for this one concert, and I got lucky, because my friends who hooked me up with the concert, they were performing in this place called Teatro Pablo Tobón, which is the biggest theater in Medellin, the city that I was in, and one of the most important theaters in Colombia. Wow. And it hosted, like, huge, big artists. Anyway, so I got lucky to play in that place, and I think just the fact that I was from a country that they didn't know it exists played a huge role, I think.
That's incredible, man. You were also telling me, is that the same project you once told me a story where you played, I think you were reciting Arabic poetry?
That's the one, yeah.
So that's the one.
That's the one, yeah. Yeah. So that was the first concert. And then after that, I had a friend who's a musician. She lives in Cali, the other city in Colombia. And I was in touch with her. I told her I might come to Cali, you know, because I really like that city. I've been there before. So I wanted to go and just have fun. And she told me that there will be a concert. And she was like, why don't you play with the same band? You know, like,
right.
Like, okay, sure. You know, it's just one after the other without even planning. That's the crazy. I mean, I did plan, of course, but it just came naturally. So we played another concert in the other city. The interesting thing is, the three musicians who were playing with me, they're all Colombians, but none of them have been to Cali. And I'm now from Colombia and I've been to Cali. So like we went, it felt really amazing that it's the first time for them to go to the city. And we were on the bus going there and playing music, sharing the stage with other Colombian artists. Like it was really the satisfaction of my Colombian side, because I do admit I have a Colombian side, because since I was 19, my adult life started and Colombia was always a part of it. So I do have some Colombian culture in me, and it was just amazing. And that's where I composed extra tracks just to fit the set. Like I didn't have enough songs, but because I had to play a whole set, so I was forced to compose.
Yeah.
So this was a good push, and I started composing more songs. So I have a couple of like 4 to 5 songs that I performed with this band. And then when I went back to Medellin, the drummer, he's well connected as well. Like he plays still with the Medellin Orchestra, the jazz orchestra.
Okay.
So he's very well connected in the city. So there was a concert and he told me, "Yo, you want to play?" So it just worked. It was beautiful. And we played the third concert. And then the fourth one was the friend that I told you about, Kogi Croker.
Right.
He had his concert and he told me he wants me to play percussion with him.
That seems like a full circle.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah, like
every person you've met or come across have come around.
Exactly. Yeah. It's just, it was like magic. It just worked, you know.
But that goes down to you putting yourself out there as well, right?
Definitely. Like, I was talking about my music when I was there. People were asking, I was telling them about it. It was like a mutual interest. And I would say, I'm well connected there. Maybe that helped. Yeah.
What would you say is, like you said, what's the one thing that appealed to you or attracted you to Colombian culture?
Definitely, it's what's the word? It's not optimism, but something like optimism. So basically, they had so right now. Mm. They ended the civil war, but
right.
not really.
Right.
It's still politically, it's a very bad place. They're really struggling politically. But what I really loved about Colombia is, number one, the nature.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy, really. It's insane. You know, like they have this river that has 7 colors. It's called the Rio de 7 colores. Like, so it has pink and purple and yellow and green. It's the rocks. They have the rocks have different colors. And naturally, you can just Google it. It's insane. So like, the nature is insane. And someone that just came from Bahrain, like, this is just paradise. So that's number one. Number two is, like, they have a 50 years civil war, and they still manage to be like crazy happy. You know, like, they're always cheerful. They're always smiling. They're always dancing. One of the days I was just walking in a neighborhood, like normal, ordinary neighborhood, you know? And this couple, they just, I don't know, something good happened. Maybe they watched a match of a team that they won, or it's their anniversary. There was something good that happened to this couple. I don't know what is it. And they just stopped their car, and they always have like this big speakers in their car. So they turned on the music, salsa, and he started dancing with his wife, and then his friends joined him, and then the girl who works in the cold store went and joined them, and then from 2 people, it ended up like 15, 20 people dancing a party for no reason, you know? So this is what really attracted me to their culture, and so humble, so friendly, and they always treated me like I'm at home, and it's the people and the nature, definitely, that's what I love. And also, because I learned the language, so like I really got connected. So I felt like it's kind of my country. So this is why I felt.
That's a very crucial thing, I think, to be immersed in any culture, is to actually understand it. And a lot of people don't take that effort.
Exactly. Some people, they just go there, and even though they know a word or two and Spanish, they wouldn't use it. They would just talk English all the time, which is fine. It's fine. I'm not saying you have to, but like, I don't know.
It's like when you get like people who spend decades in the Arab world and don't speak any word.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, if they're in Bahrain, I wouldn't blame them, because everybody speaks English. But if you're in Egypt, and
it's our fault.
Yeah. No, definitely. Because people, if they're in Egypt, like, they would learn Arabic much easier than they're in Bahrain.
Yeah. I think that's another thing, right? I have another friend as well who spent some time in Colombia for a few months, and he was like, if I hadn't like tried to actually take lessons and engage, and he was like with Colombian friends, he wouldn't have been as engaged in the culture, and he would have seen the things they've seen and experienced
exactly,
in
yeah.
the same way.
Actually, the funny thing is, all those people who invited me to play these concerts, none of them speak English.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So imagine if I didn't speak Spanish.
Wow. Yeah, man. Any plans to going back again?
Yeah, I was supposed to be there on 23rd of April. I had my ticket booked and everything. And even though like in March, it was... The corona thing was going crazy, right. But not too crazy. I was still up for it. I was still up for going to Colombia and then being in forced quarantine for 2 weeks. At least I will be there for 3 months. I don't mind. Yeah, I'll lose 2 weeks. But then the Colombian government, they stopped all commercial flights. Even my friends who are in Europe right now, who are Colombians, they cannot go back to Colombia because all commercial flights are banned. But this time is different because it's global. So.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, it's forcing people to change their thinking, their way of life, their mentality, and more like obviously for us, like involved in music,
exactly,
completely like turn things upside down,
exactly,
basically.
180 degrees. I don't know. Like, I'm guessing by now, because like we with Majaz, we were in contact with a couple of festivals abroad, and that we were supposed to play this year summer.
Right.
A couple of countries and all of them, they're telling us that they're going to postpone their gigs to next year.
Right.
So it shows that they're putting hope for next year.
Yeah.
I think no one knows whether next year is going to be better or not, but I don't know. If I was them, I think I'd do it anyway, even if it's minimizing the crowd or social distancing kind of form or cars or whatever, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is going to, the impact is going to be felt for years to come, I think. But it would be interesting to see how people get like creative and playful with how within this circumstance.
Yeah, that's crazy.
You can get it, you know?
I think in Netherlands there was already a club that opened and people were dancing in their seats, which is weird.
Yeah. I think I saw that video. It's very surreal.
Yeah.
But speaking of that time, now that people, especially with musicians and the music scene, kind of like went into hiding for a while, that gave you also the time to focus on these kind of side projects that you're working on, right?
100%.
The scene and the community in general has become suddenly much more productive in terms
productive,
of output.
Yeah.
How did you utilize that time?
I mean, I'm sure I'm not the only one who's saying this, but like I know a lot of people who are saying this as well, that we needed this time, you know, like like in a way, maybe I'll change my mind later, but for so far it's really working in my favor. I mean before, like since 2015 until now, I was actively playing gigs, and it took 80% of my time, you know. So I only had this 20% of my time where I can actually work on these projects, improve my drumming, improve my piano skills, and you know, like I had so many undone projects with different music collaborations, you know. So I had the time to finish all of them and work on new ones, and even my side projects aside from music, which is filmmaking, I was able to finish the movie that I thought it would never finish. So, and then also as soon as I finished it, I finished my second short movie like very fast, and I think it wouldn't have been this way if it wasn't for the pandemic. So it did definitely even with Majaz, you know, we just actually yesterday we finished the mix of our next single.
Nice.
So it's pretty much done. We're just not sure if we're gonna release it as a single or with a video clip. We're just deciding, but that's happening as well.
And you've also been busy with Arab Stract and kind of trying to push that more.
I'm meeting Maram tomorrow, and we're supposed to do this session that we never did. We always wanted to do it, and we never did, which is basically practice, not for a concert. Because every time we practice, it's for a concert, which is bad.
Right.
You know? I think a lot of bands, they have this situation.
So what's the difference?
The difference is, if we have a concert, then we have to focus on these tracks that we want to play, and then we won't risk it and change things in it, and we would be a bit, not pressured, but like come on, Ella, let's do the next song, you know, like we have to finish, right. we have 2 hours left, you know, and it's going to be very late, you know, so you have this pressure to like focus on the concert and what you want to present. But then if it's not for a concert, then we can relax, drink coffee whenever you want, you can be slow if you want to, and give every part what it deserves. And so we wanted to have the session a long time back and we never did. So tomorrow we're finally doing it. We're just going to chill. We'll see every song of ours if we want to change anything in it and compose new stuff and take our time, you know.
Yeah.
We need that. And even I think with Majaz we have this problem is that we mostly practice for concerts and we barely practice not for a concert.
Since a lot of your work revolves around collaboration, what's your philosophy when it comes to that? How do you approach that?
I think for every artist is different. Like, so if it depends, you know, like for me personally, my perfect scenario for a collaboration is to work with a vocalist that doesn't know how to play music.
Right.
For me, this is perfect because I will do everything that they don't know how to do.
Right.
And they will do what I, because I cannot sing. so that's the perfect
do one thing that you can
I can't do. Yet. Yet, maybe. Yeah. I hope one day.
Yeah.
So far, it's not going good. So let's stick to production. So yeah, this is my perfect scenario. But I obviously don't want to stick to that. So that Lithuanian girl that I told you about, she's very musical. She plays guitar probably better than me, and she's been playing jazz. Like she's pretty advanced and she's a good musician. But still, I collaborated with her. She sent me this very traditional Lithuanian gospel kind of thing, and I made it very electronic.
Nice.
She liked it, and I do these collaborations with different musicians. But yeah, I think your question.
How do you know who you want to collaborate with?
That's it. So the Colombian girl, for example, like I had her on my page for a long time and I saw her music and I like what she does. So she just posted this very casual video of her playing guitar and singing casually, nothing serious. Mm-hmm. And I just thought like this melody is so nice, like it really has something special, you know, like if it was just any other song, I would just scroll down. But this song really had something nice, you know, and I can tell that... She just singing it with a guitar and I can already imagine what it can be, you know, like full band, full production. Right. So I approached her, I told her, is this your song? And she said, yes, it is. And I told her, did you ever record it? Do you have? She said, no, actually, this is the one song I never recorded, you know.
Okay.
And so I told her, if you want, I can produce it. It's completely like, you know, under your name. You just put my name as a producer. And yeah, she was totally up for it. She liked what I did. And it's going to be released. Yesterday, I was working on the song. So it's pretty much done. It's just I'm waiting for a trumpet player to add a solo in it. And it's pretty much done. So this is one way. And then the other one was like the Lithuanian girl, for example. We were just chatting and we said, look, we should... Most of the time it's this way, actually. It's, yo, man, like let's collaborate, you know? Like we should do music together. And we
Someone
both
agree. Should do this and ends up being you doing it. So that's how...
Yeah, exactly. So with the Lithuanian girl, it was, I think, the situation where it's usually... between like most musicians it's this way, like you just, we have to make music together, let's do it. What do you want to work on? Do you want me to compose something and then you sing on it, or do you want to sing something and send it to me and I music on it, whatever, you know, like we just see what's your comfort zone, because some artists their comfort zone is having vocals and then composing the music on it, or some people like they want to compose the music and then giving it to the vocalist and the vocalist compose. Some musicians are comfortable both ways.
Well, this is kind of very relevant as well, because it's part of your progression as a creator and a collaborator. And you've mentioned that briefly. You've gotten into making films, filmmaking. Mm-hmm. You worked on a couple of projects. What drove you initially to want to do that?
To filmmaking, you mean, or whatever
project? Making films.
Making films. So there was this classmate I had in high school. He was, I think, the most introverted person I ever met in my whole life. I never met an introverted person more than him. So he would like, he never talks, you know, so it was very interesting to talk to him. Like if you talk to him, you actually have a proper conversation every single time I had a conversation with him. So when I graduated, after like 5 or 6 years, he just randomly added me on Facebook And we just started chatting, and he's a huge film fanatic, so he used to suggest these movies for me. Like, I was into cinema, but not deeply right. as now. So he used to suggest these really interesting philosophical movies, like Sunset Limited. I don't know if you know it. It's pretty good. It's actually a play, but Tommy Lee Jones directed. You've seen it?
Yeah, I've read the book. Okay. Yeah, I haven't seen the book.
Oh, the movie's pretty. It's just Samuel J. Jackson and Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah,
it's pretty good. Stuff like that, or Waking Life by Richard Linklater.
All right,
you know, like these kind of movies, very conversational. Yeah. I love this kind of movie. So he suggested a lot of movies, and for around 1 year, every movie he suggests, I watched it because I like his taste. This is where I got into, not filmmaking, but I got into cinema in a deeper way. Like I started focusing more on the actors, on the colors, on how it's shot and why this shot is shot this way. When the actor was saying such sentences, you know, like all these details, I started to notice it, and I got into it even more. And then one of my closest friends, Saleh Sharif, he's a writer and a filmmaker as well, so he was always into films even before me. So he worked on his first film, Exhausted Remedies, a short movie.
Okay.
I don't remember which year, maybe 2015 or before. So I helped him with that movie, and he worked on his second movie. I just helped a little bit, not much. But yeah, I was always involved in his projects. And then he did his future movie, which is pretty good.
Yeah.
It was shot in Turkey. Also very conversational, philosophical. It's my kind of movie. And I worked on, I didn't do much actually, but I was just helping him for we were in Turkey for a month and just
like
working.
Learning that process.
Exactly, yeah.
In it,
really. So I really liked the process. I liked how it's done. And I saw a lot of similarities between making movies and making music. So so I thought, I'd like to do that someday, but not now, whenever I'm ready. And then when I watched, I think I watched a lot of movies, so like I still have a lot that I didn't watch, but I watched a lot of movies. Like it's like a ritual for me. So I think this made me more comfortable, and I was also always around filmmakers. And the first script I wrote was actually in Colombia, with Vivi. You met her, she was the bassist who was performing with me. So she studied art design for movies, she knew how to write scripts and stuff. So she started teaching me how to write a script and for a movie, and I wrote my first script because I had the story a long time back. This script is actually in Spanish. I still didn't shoot it. It should be my first feature film.
Okay.
I still didn't shoot it, but this was the first script I wrote, and then I really liked that process as well. So as soon as I came back to Bahrain, I was just trying to find a producer who would be interested in my stories, because I think I have more 15 to 20 stories written for movies. And then I found Angelina Soon. So she was the producer that was really interested.
Okay.
And this is where I made my first movie.
All right.
So it's step by step. Thing.
Nice.
Yeah.
So thanks Abdullah. That was a good chat.
Thanks for having me.
Seeing you around very, very soon, I'm sure.
Pleasure to be with you.
Thank you again for listening. Please follow us on social media for the latest guest announcements. We have a few lined up for you. And share your thoughts and comments as well. We'd love to hear from you. Till then, bye-bye.